This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can be a part on the lines or on the text, on the socials as well. 855-752-4842. Jazzed as hell, our friend James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, the Law Review, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network on Saturdays 9 to 11. Caught a little bit of your show last week, Jim. Always a pleasure to have you, man. Thanks for sticking around.
Glad to be here once again, as always.
As always. Now, we're going to get to the Bibles in Oklahoma. We promised Jazz we'll get to it, but we got to start out with the Trump trials.
Yes.
Or whatever we're calling them now.
Right. The Trump former trials.
He was supposed to be sentenced, but Judge Juan Merchan.
Yes.
Yeah. Is what, freezing, delaying that until after 2029?
Sometime in the future, right?
What?
You invite me, you and Jess invite me here to be a part of your show. And I thought, okay, this is the week when we can do the dramatic reading from Juan Merchan, much delayed since July 1. He was going to tell us whether or not that Supreme Court case that says that, yes, indeed, presidents can commit crimes in the White House and get away with it. He was going to tell us whether that prevents him from going ahead. We're going to do some dramatic readings, right, my friend?
Yeah,
and we're
absolutely.
Going to be out here and quoting from Juan Merchan, much delayed over the period of the past almost 6 months. Donald Trump convicted by a jury unanimously beyond a reasonable doubt in mid-May, okay, waiting all this time, a July sentencing date, a September sentencing date, November 26th, a sentencing date. And then on Tuesday, quite literally in the 9 o'clock East Coast, the pundits are saying, any moment now, we're going to hear from Juan Merchan. And then the news changed. We started talking about we're waiting to hear from the DA about what he wants to do. And within a couple hours, this entire thing devolved, to my mind, outrageously, to the point you've got Alvin Bragg, the prosecutor, saying, well, maybe we either freeze this or dismiss it.
Freeze?
What does freeze mean? And again, Juan Merchan says, okay, nothing I'm going to say today. That's off the calendar. And oh, by the way, that sentencing that I've now postponed at least twice, if not three times, that's off the calendar too, indefinitely. Presumably we'll hear from again. Here's the point. In America, once you are convicted of a crime, what do we all do? What does everybody know what happens to a criminal defendant? If you're acquitted, you go on your way and you are done with the system. If you are convicted of a crime in state court, in federal court, what happens? Let's all say it together. You are sentenced. That's what happens.
Yes.
To sentence a defendant. That's the infinitive, right? And so why not do that? Do that now. This particular individual, this defendant, is a private citizen right now. Make the compelling argument that you're going to be interrupting maybe a day of his transition, but bring him back to New York. I think he's in New York with some frequency. Get him in there, sentence him. Do whatever you want to do, Juan Merchan, whether it's put him on probation. I myself think there should be some incarcerative period, not a long period of time, not 4 years, but something to send the message. And then you know what? Then you stay that, which basically says, I'm imposing the sentence. I am done with this. Take your appeal now, Donald Trump, and spend the next 3 years appealing this to the appeals court, to the high court in New York. Knock yourself out, do all that, but bring this to conclusion and tell America what should happen to this defendant who you said, Juan Merchan, was going to be treated like every other defendant. What are we doing here, Dom? What's happened to the rule of law? I will tell you that when it comes to Juan Merchan and, frankly, Alvin Bragg, these folks talking about now just drop-kicking the regular process in America because we know, yes, he's going to be the president of the United States of America, but he's not now. And we've got 60 more days to do all this.
I mean, he could do a 30-day stint in 60 days.
Right. Who could do that if,
I mean,
if indeed, right?
That's what the
right,
man says
right,
to me, man.
Right. And so I was shocked. I was outraged. And again, I've got a bias. Your listeners know that well. I was a former prosecutor. But in all those cases, you bring them to conclusion. If the judge wants to place the defendant on probation, I may or may not agree with that recommendation. Often prosecutors.
At least it's a sentence.
It's a sentence, right. And you live with it because everybody does their job. And then you go up in the Court of Appeals and they review all that. And let's get that underway. That could also proceed in the next 3 to 4 years. And frankly, by the time Donald Trump is done with his term, presumably he's done with a 4-year term and not something beyond that. It may well be that at the end of that, maybe all that process will be done. And then the state of New York could execute on that sentence. Now what's going to happen if we freeze this, which appears to be the procedural thing that they've made up there in New York? What will happen? Okay, we'll freeze it now. In 2029, we're going to pull this file off the shelf, and Juan Merchan is then going to sentence Donald Trump. And then in 2029 and 2030 and 2031 and 2032, we'll do all these appeals. And sometime when Donald Trump is, I can't do the math, I'm not good, I'm a lawyer. Whenever he is as old as he is, then we're going to impose a sentence that gets affirmed. You must be joking. I'm outraged. I'm befuddled. Somebody needs to tell me, what is the legal principle that supports this indefinite and now completely drop-kicked approach in New York and frankly in other places as well?
Justice delayed is justice denied.
It is. And that was again the approach of the Trump team. Frankly, the future deputy attorney general, who again is sitting next to Donald Trump.
His defense lawyer.
And congratulations for the small C. Aggressive strategy. Successful. Absolutely. Look at what the defense team has done. They have taken these four cases, including that one, the Georgia case, also, again, another state case out there, still arguably pending in front of the appeals court. But what did they do just last week, Dom? Again, curiously, just took the oral argument date off the calendar. What is that about? What did you do? What's going on there? Why are we not going to get a resolution of that appeal there in the Georgia case? It has to do with Fannie Willis and admittedly this sort of inappropriate relationship.
Right, whether or not she can stay on the case because she was sleeping with her assistant prosecutor. Right? But it has nothing to do with the case, right? And didn't bias them in any way. And oh yeah, so what? At the end of the day, there's still a RICO charge against Trump and lots of other people. What about those other folks, man? Are those cases going to go forward? Isn't he a co-defendant with all, or is he split off?
He is right. He is a co-defendant. You could, again, that's the big issue, right? Presumably, they're not subject to the immunities that the Supreme Court identified.
They're going to freeze that, right?
And they're not going to be the president of the United States of America. Maybe, if your theory about Matt Gaetz and Gableman is true, maybe they could be candidates for positions in this administration. But I'll take my tongue out of my cheek and say quite seriously, I'm shocked by that as well. And let's go to the two others. Tanya Chutkan. Okay. She's got a motion from Jack Smith.
Now, this is the January 6th.
This is the January 6th.
Overturning the election.
This is the really big one, right?
Yeah,
right.
The one that really, really matters.
And she has said, I'm going to treat you like everybody else. I don't know what Jack Smith is doing. I don't know why he is filing a motions both there and in the Mar-a-Lago documents case with the 11th Circuit, saying to all those tribunals, hold on, suspend, terminate what you've got right now. And those motions are being granted. Tanya Chutkan, after saying for years, I'm going to treat you like every other defendant, granted that motion of my government, of the Department of Justice that represents us. And she said, okay, I'm taking off all the deadlines. Why, Tanya?
Well, the DOJ is pulling back, and certainly, you know, Trump's team. Well, what's the judge going to say? Okay, both these folks want to pull back and freeze or do whatever, delay. What am I going to do? She's granted the motion.
Right, and she did just that. And I would say, Tanya, that's wrong. You don't have to grant a motion of the Department of Justice. Issue your opinion on the homework given to you by the Supreme Court. Supreme Court told you to figure out whether or not this crazy thing about immunities should apply to your case. You have to be working on it. You've got half the briefs already submitted. Get the briefs from the defense and spend the next 45 days finishing that up and issue that decision. You don't have to grant that motion. Admittedly, is the case ever going to be tried? No, it's not. Impossible to envision any scenario. Is it a good thing under the rule of law to get that opinion out there, to bring this cycle of history to an end? I would argue absolutely. And go to the 11th Circuit also, which has likewise been told, suspend everything. Is it significant? Maybe not quite as Tanya Chutkan's order.
That's the Florida documents case that's under appeal because the judge
Eileen Cannon said a prosecutor can't do this. A crazy notion. Would it
because
be
he's a special prosecutor. She dismissed the special prosecutor.
Exactly. Because Clarence Thomas said, somebody should look at this. And she said, okay, I will. I'll dismiss the case. Is it helpful to the rule of law in America, even though that case will never go to trial, for us to hear from another appellate court that says, you know what, special counsel has legitimacy. There's nothing to what Eileen Cannon said. Slap her down again, not physically. Slap her down again as they've done twice before and tell her how wrong she is. We would be valued, high value in hearing from the 11th Circuit. None of that will happen. I don't know what's going on, Dom. Why it is we're pulling back from all of this at a time when we can bring them to an end.
Rich white men play in the justice system, man. Are you really surprised?
I am.
I don't know, man. Right? I mean, it seems to me so stereotypical. Delay, hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, he's just pilfered all this money, it was donated to him from his cult followers. Right. To work the system. And now that he got elected, if he wasn't elected, this wouldn't be happening.
It would not be happening. None of this would be happening. All those cases would still be going ahead. Now we've got a complete reversal of fortune. And think about that. We've got a situation where judicial proceedings are, until just this past week or weeks or so, we're moving ahead a pace, right? And now what happened? In a political arena, there was a decision to nominate and campaign under and now elect this person who happens, yes, indeed, to have the most important position on the face of the planet. And that is now going to direct what our criminal justice system does in states and the federal courts as well. If that doesn't strike you as problematic in America and, again, a sign of where we are in America— it should. And again, surprise, maybe not surprised, but shocked, as they often say.
Folks, that is James Santel, former U.S. attorney, still feeling.
I'll jump off my soapbox.
I know, man. Jim, you work for the DOJ.
I did. 30 years. That's how old I am.
Are you proud of this organization, man?
I'm extremely proud of this organization. Is it perfect? Absolutely not.
Less perfect situation than what we're seeing right now?
I can't remember when it was. I worked for 9 attorneys general, Dom. 7 of them Republicans and 2 of them Democrats. Not politicized, not the kind of thing we've seen in recent years. Extraordinarily proud of the agencies, the investigators, the prosecutors, people in the U.S. Attorney's Office. I have so much respect for them around the country. And now what's happening? And that's why my bias, obviously, is in favor of the integrity of the system. That's why I'm so outraged with what's happened here. And the fact we're not going to get conclusions here. And it's not going to happen. I am shocked.
Not getting conclusions means he got away with it, Jim.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's not okay, dude.
It's not.
Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Coming back with more of your calls and your texts as well. Stick around.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere. When the truth is found to be lies, and all the joy within you dies, don't you?
Thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. It's a text line. It's a phone line. And we got some texters jumping in here. James Santel at the desk with me, Jess P.S. on the board. A couple of thoughts here from the 740 WMDX. I've never enjoyed so much a bunch of words that made me so angry. Thank you to the guests. Thank you, Jim. You're firing them up out there.
Right, right. That's what I do. I make people angry, apparently, in 2024,
no.
2025.
Gary from WAUK, Jim's right. These judges should have set a precedent. Thank you for your comments, Gary. I don't know if it's a precedent. It's just like normal business, right? I mean, you just go and you're guilty, you get sentenced. I mean, why would the future something impact what is going on right now?
Absolutely. And again, if we know from history, recent and past, when you rely upon things that might happen in the future, it's not going to go well, right? Right? It's just, I always bring this along when I'm ever with you. This is On Tyranny by Timothy Snyder. Do not obey in advance is rule of law number one, right?
Yep.
When a citizen who adapts in this way is teaching power what it can do, that's what you're doing by saying, nope, we're not going to issue any decisions. We're shutting all this down now in anticipation of something that will likely happen.
Sure.
Let's be realistic about it.
Yeah.
The trials will not happen. But get those rule of law decisions. When you do this and do it now, you're also instructing the future leaders, I will say with a small L, and they may have other descriptive aspects to them in the future. You're also telling them what they can do when they get into power. That's very dangerous. That's tyranny, according to Tim Snyder.
And since we're not there yet, not suggesting, and we heard some, I don't know if the report in there, there's been some ambulances at Mar-a-Lago. Do we know anything more about that?
No, okay. I don't know anything more about that.
But notwithstanding, there's some reporting out there, some thoughts about their Secret Service might be involved, but we'll get to that later. My point on that, Jim, is the dude could have a medical condition between now and then. I mean, there could be some circumstance where he doesn't take the office.
Right, right.
Well, what are you doing then?
Right.
Do you have to wind it all back up again then? What are these people doing?
Right, exactly. And talk about, again, look, if something like that should happen, nobody hopes that Donald Trump or anyone else in the next administration suffers that kind of challenge, medical or otherwise. It's the reason why we have rules when it comes to civil litigation and criminal litigation, and we proceed apace. And yes, indeed, if I've had this happen just a handful of times in 30 years, we were investigating, I won't tell you at all about the case, we're investigating a potential defendant. He died during the course of the investigation, right? And what you do is, and we knew that he was ill for a long period of time, but we didn't bring the case to conclusion until after we knew that had happened.
And right, so all this guy's going to die, so we're not going to pursue it anyway. Hyman Roth from The Godfather 2, he's been dying from the same heart attack for 30 years.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Some people continue on. You don't let those things influence a straightforward judicial process, right?
Especially from people. Again, Tanya Chutkan. Again, I admire her tremendously. I am so surprised. Again, this is a woman who has consistently said, "I'm unlike Juan Merchan, I'm not delaying things. Get your motions in here. Get your briefs in here, gentlemen." It's been some females, but mostly men representing Donald Trump. And now she says, "Okay, 60 days out, I'll grant this motion." These are people who have been committed to the process. And again,
I mean, this is my thing. I mean, and I'd love to give the deference as you do as well. But I got to look at the actions here, man. And I'm not a former U.S. attorney. I'm not even an attorney. I'm just a guy in the radio looking at a situation where it looks like these guys are getting a pass. You got enough money. You got enough influence. You don't have to go through the process. And even though the guy could literally get sentenced for the crime that he was convicted of unanimously by a jury of his peers, get the sentence and do 5 days, 10 days, 30 days, whatever the case is. Hell, even house arrest, puts something on the guy,
conclude,
man.
Conclude this case
and
put a bow on it and move it on. This notion, once again, that any of these matters would be frozen. I don't know what that means
legal term
at all,
that,
right?
Jim, real quick, before we move on to other matters at the bottom of the hour here. I know you're proud of your work that you've done, man.
I
absolutely appreciate that and respect you for all that you've done. What are your former colleagues thinking about these issues? And Matt Gaetz is now off the board, thankfully. But this adjudication of the Trump cases.
I have not spoken directly to sitting assistant U.S. attorneys out there or sitting United States attorneys. I suspect they would probably maybe not have my animated outrage about this, but they're also people, again, all sides of the political aisle. They're Republicans and Democrats,
right,
as assistant U.S. attorneys, as assistant district attorneys around this country. It doesn't influence their decisions about how you charge cases. They're also people of institution. Frankly, defense counsel are people of institutions who want some resolution. Yes, indeed, is a legitimate strategy to delay, and it benefits defense counsel. But there's a good reason for the justice system generally to have conclusions to it. That's the reason why we move forward. That's why we have speedy trial acts and limits on the amount of pages you can write. And when you've got to appear, all these kinds of things, I have to believe, and from some conversations I've had with other lawyers not inside the Department of Justice, they also look at this and say, what is going on here? And again, to ask the question that I truly want someone to explain to me, what the legal principle is that prompts this all to be suspended right now. My sense is there's also a huge amount of, at a minimum, head scratching going on about the ways in which these are ending with an incredible whimper. A whimper is the way that these cases are ending. They're never going to trial, but they should have ended with some conclusion on some of these meritorious issues. That's what we lack. That's what American history will now lack forever.
Folks, that is James Santel, former U.S. attorney and host of Amicus, a law review right here on the Civic Media Radio Network on Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m. And we get to have a little fun together once a week.
We
Jim,
do.
I appreciate you joining me today. We're going to get into the Bibles, the separation of church and state, and should religion be taught in school? Should it be taught as a matter of history? How should it be taught? Should all religions be taught? I want to get your sense on that as well. And then I got one other question before we move on from the Trump stuff. I'm going to save it for the other side. 855-752-4842. Join us.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
I've seen what you call progress, every warning sign ignored. There's a muffled voice of reason, but we can't make out the words.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Former U.S. Attorney James Santel joining me at the table today. We got some texters and some callers. Be patient. We will get to you. Jim from the Facebook says, love Jim always on the air or in his summertime classroom. A lot of love for James Santel here. Before we move on to the Oklahoma Bible study, to wrap up this thought on the Department of Justice and these cases against Donald Trump, in your experience, Jim, U.S. attorney for 30 years,
right?
Have you ever been involved or had a situation where you felt pressured politically, where you felt that your safety was in jeopardy, because of any cases that you were working on?
The answer to the first part of that is absolutely not. And I want to animate that and populate that answer a little bit more. And the second part of it is, of course, as the United States attorney, and this is the easy thing to answer, and people will say, well, gee, that's very serious. You are plainly the person whose name is on the prosecution, right? And this is James Santel announced today the indictment of so-and-so. And so you're the face of the Department of Justice in the particular district. Are there times when you do get letters, for example, from a defendant who is one day sitting in federal prison who writes a letter to the U.S. attorney in eastern Wisconsin or in southern Florida or in western Michigan? that is a threat. Sure, there are. Those things happen. And I don't want to say they come with the territory, but they are investigated and they are pursued. And the answer is, did I personally ever feel threatened? Even in that setting, that sort of thing, even a criminal defendant. And I did violent crime cases. I did white collar stuff. I did violent crime cases, drug cases, gun cases. The answer is they plainly didn't like me, the fellow who was sitting right. at the, and I get that completely. Yeah. I'm arguing for their criminal conviction and arguably for the single most important thing that a government can do, which is deny you your liberty. I get the reason why I am the face as an assistant U.S. attorney, and a U.S. attorney is someone they would not like. I never actually felt physically threatened. I never felt that as if I was compromised in some way in that. To your first portion, that is pressure to do something. And there is an absolute no, my friend. Again, worked for 7 different attorneys general, including, again, admire her so very much, Janet Reno, Eric Holder were the ones with whom I probably had the most connection. I was an interim U.S. attorney under John Ashcroft and also worked with Alberto Gonzalez when I was overseas in Iraq, all those names from the past. Not once did anyone look at me and say, well, you know, Jim, the Democratic platform says the Republican position on this is it just doesn't happen. And you can set the tone, as I'd like to think I did, and former U.S. attorneys and subsequent U.S. attorneys can do. You say inside the office that we will look at cases based upon the merits. We'll determine whether or not a grand jury would indict, a jury would convict. Based upon what the law is, we'll pull out our criminal code and figure out how we should charge these cases. We'll call the agents in, the FBI, DEA, ATF, and quiz them on the cases. And simply never ask, are we being loyal to the president here, loyal to what Eric Holder or John Ashcroft would want us to do? It doesn't come up or shouldn't come up. In my experience, it was not a part of anywhere in the process. And I'm very proud of that fact. That's the reason why this great concern, again, the 8 days of Matt Gaetz are gone. But what is next? And if indeed the Department of Justice becomes the focus of retribution and is the animator.
To bring the CIA, the FBI, all these agencies to heal, I believe, was the term that Gaetz said.
Exactly. If that is what we have coming in the 60 days from now, that is a huge departure from what my experience was for 3 decades. And it is a reason that, again, will, in the wake of my great, profound pride for every single aspect of the Department of Justice, again, perfect, absolutely not. Lots of things we have to correct on a regular basis, but proud of the institution, the integrity it brings, that could very well change. And again, even though Gaetz is no longer there, the signal, as you said at the start of the first hour this afternoon, maybe it's this attempt to see what we can do and send the message, this is my plan. And that will be a dramatic change, not just in Maine Justice, but around the country for U.S. Attorney's Office. Once again, in the District of Arizona, in Montana, in Northern Illinois, which is Chicago, and in the Southern District of New York, in Eastern Wisconsin and Western Wisconsin, you populate these places. Boy, you'd like to think that we don't have attorneys who would kneel to a president and take a confirmation from the Senate, a nomination. Maybe they're out there around the country. You need 93 of them to be U.S. attorneys. I hope that doesn't change. I hope the integrity is there. You also have a president who's promised to get rid of the civil service. That's all the assistant U.S. attorneys and make them at-will employees. And if they don't bow, if they don't kneel, if they don't do what the president says, much less the attorney general, I can fire you. Those are the prospects. Those are things that are on the table right now. He said that during the course of the campaign, and he is not backing off of those things. That's what scares me.
Have you ever considered, or do you have former associates at the DOJ who would leave the position because of an incoming Republican or Democrat, sure, whatever the case may be? Has that been a thing ever?
Yeah, I think sometimes I remember. People will privately, again, outside of those official categories, say, oh, my goodness, now you fill in the blank. This attorney general is going to come in. Now we're going to be doing all these kinds of cases when we should be doing those. People have those kinds of observations. That's not politics inside the office. But you see that there have been U.S. attorneys who have said, you know what? I know I'm not going to survive a new administration. I left at the end of the Obama administration. That is regular. And so even when this happens, no listeners think that Donald Trump is now firing all the U.S. attorneys. They're all going to go. That's a part of the process here. We'll see how he does that. But that will happen early on in 2025. There are U.S. attorneys who say, you know what? I do not want to spend one day under the term of, and you fill in your president's name. And that has happened. And again, you might think, well, gee, that sounds awfully political, Jim. And maybe it is for that person in that political position who simply says, I want to be the kind of U.S. attorney who will be serving a president that I respect, or serving an attorney general I respect. And I have just decided that I would prefer to wake up in the morning and look in the mirror as a private citizen, as opposed to continuing under an administration. I wonder right now if there are people out there, 10, 15, 20, 30 years tenure, who say, gosh, is this a president? Is this an attorney general under whom I want to continue if indeed the Department of Justice becomes the Department of Retribution?
855-752-4842. James Santel, my co-host today here at the table. Let's move along. The Oklahoman reporting that Ryan Walters, Oklahoma's state superintendent, he's buying a bunch of Bibles. Mm-hmm. He put out a video the other day that he made everyone play in their schools. And if they didn't, they're going to be in trouble, where he says he wants to start teaching the Bible in schools. In the news release, Walter said the Bibles would be used in advanced placement government classrooms across the state. He said the move represented the first in the nation Bible purchase explicitly for use in schools as an academic and literary resource, and described the purchase as the first step toward providing Bibles for every classroom in the state. Now, my understanding is some of those Bibles, based on the specs that they made, were only really, really going to be fulfilled by the Donald Trump Bibles. But I think
they cost $60.
That's been redone, my understanding. But either way, the Bible in the classroom, Jim. Separation of church and state, is that a thing, or was I taught wrong?
You were not taught wrong, Dom. And the reality is that none of us was taught improperly here. Let's go back to 1963. This has been settled, right? 1963, I know you know this, Jess knows this, is Abington School District versus Shemp. And in that case, the United States Supreme Court said that public schools cannot support Bible readings in class. Those are recitations, even the Lord's Prayer, those kinds of things. They constitute a government endorsement of a religion. That violates what? The Establishment Clause. Government cannot establish or do something that promotes a particular religion. That's what James Madison told us, right, in the First Amendment to the Constitution. We've lived under that, again, for at least now 40 years, frankly, 250 years or so of our history. This is settled law, and this is a superintendent saying, I don't care what the law of the land is. Again, what can you do? Here are a couple of variations on it. People often say, well, there can be no Bible reading. I cannot read my religious text in school. The answer is no, that's not what the Supreme Court said. Supreme Court said you can't stand up in front of your AP government class and say, okay, open your book to Leviticus and let's read from Leviticus today. You can't have that organizational piece in a study hall. Can an independent student open the Guru Granth Sahib if you happen to be sick, S-I-K-H? Can you open the Bible and read it if you are a Christian? Absolutely you can do
your
that.
Your own Bible as a student, knock yourself out.
You can't have government, however, enforcing that upon other people. What you can do, the other piece that you can do is you can have, again, that's why the AP government thing is very interesting. Can you do a course on world religions? Sure you can, as long as you're not proselytizing and you are talking about world religions, right? There are many, many, many of them out there. We talk about Christianity and Judaism and Hinduism, Buddhism, Sikhism. Those are kind of the top five that are out there. And there are 20 and 30 and 40 others that are recognized out there. You can put together an academic course that talks about where they come from historically, how they're interrelated. We know, for example, that the Abrahamic faiths, right? Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, all of those, where those come from and how those, you can do that kind of a thing without saying, and this is what Muhammad said, this is what Jesus said, and we are to follow that because we're reading this together, and we're all going to embrace exactly what. That's the difference. And that's why the superintendent is so very, very wrong. That's the reason why we'll see what happens in Oklahoma. Somebody's got to stop that from happening. It's in violation of the Supreme Court, the law of the land, right?
Well,
right?
You know, my opinion, Jim, you could teach all those things in mythology class in your literature. Yep. Louisiana putting up the Ten Commandments, same kind of thing. Right. Now, obviously, there's pushback. There's lawsuits. I mean, this is I can't imagine. But again, this is a brave new world. I can't imagine someone sentenced for fraud back in the early summer wouldn't or convicted of fraud wouldn't be sentenced. But you know, things happen. Jim, this is a constant push. They're continuing to push for this. What about the Ten Commandments in the classroom? Same thing?
Exactly. It's the same thing. Because, again, if you are putting this up there, there have been some major cases, even about the Ten Commandments. We've seen these appearing in official government offices or even outside the city hall, that sort of thing, and saying, here they are. Here are the rules that we all apply. We all follow and we apply in our lives. That also is in violation of what? The Establishment Clause. Because once again, this government entity, public schools, public entities are saying we are embracing this Christian codification and can't do it. You're not supposed to do it. But to your point, once again, what we're doing here is revisiting things from, again, 40 years and seeing if we can take another swipe at it and see if we can get that back to the Supreme Court. And maybe somebody will tell us, no, Supreme Court was wrong back in 1963. We've all been living under the wrong interpretation here. Gosh, we've heard that before, haven't we?
We sure
2022
have.
Dobbs. Turns out we don't have a privacy right to abortion under the Constitution. We thought that was settled. Apparently not.
All hail Baphomet. Nolan from Madison, you are up. Welcome, Nolan. What do you got for us?
Howdy.
Hey there.
Yeah, I was just like thinking, you know, Oklahoma is kind of what, 48?
48. Yes. Go ahead, Nolan. You still there? All right, we lost Nolan. Good point. Thank you for bringing it up. During a great interview on CNN, State Superintendent of Oklahoma Ryan Walters was asked, "Yes, sir, but you know you're spending all this money on Bibles. I think he wants like $6 million to go buy these Bibles. Wouldn't that be better spent on other issues in your classroom since you're ranked 48th in the nation?"
Maybe some chemistry books, some chemistry texts, some physics, or frankly, some literature, right? Let's bring in some world literature, right? And talk about that. All kinds of things that maybe, just maybe, the superintendent should be focused on. Again, I'm not going to say traditional education, but there is such a thing, and he needs to be focused on just that.
855-752-4842. One final segment with our friend, James Santel.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up on the lines right now. 855-752-4842. Callers, texters, we see you. Be patient. We will get to you. James Santel talking about religion in schools. And not religious schools. I went to a private Catholic religious school. You expect to get taught religion in those classes.
Okay.
And not just the belief, but I mean, not just the history, but also the belief part
Absolutely.
Of it. And I don't object to a historical. I mean, obviously, religion has been very influential in civilization.
6,000 years,
and
right?
I would say negatively. If I'm teaching that class, I'm saying, look at all the justification we've done to murder each other.
Let's talk about the Crusades for a while, right?
You know what I mean? And go on and all the things that were before and all the things that are yet to come.
Yeah.
I always say it, man. Today's religion is tomorrow's mythology. So am I going to be able to go and pray to Odin and bring my raven to class as part of my religious freedom? You know what I mean? There is, as the non-believer, and everyone's a non-believer to some degree. You know what I'm saying? Because you might believe in your religion, but you don't believe in all the other ones.
Yes,
so
yes,
you're all, everyone's an atheist to some degree. I just take mine one God further. Mm-hmm. But this case, September 17th, 1980, the Stone versus Graham, U.S. Supreme Court ruled 5-4.
Split court.
That a Kentucky statute requiring school officials to put a copy of the Ten Commandments on a wall in every public classroom violated the First Amendment's Establishment Clause. 5-4, Jim.
That's a little close,
oh,
isn't
what?
It?
So, yes, I mean, when it was 5-4 the other way, then how does that... How is that even possible? How could a Supreme Court justice, looking at the Constitution, right, say, oh, yeah, that makes total sense?
They're going back 15, 18 years and saying, no, there's an entire line of establishment cases, and these are pretty clear, right? We're talking about public institutions, publicly funded. Again, some of the other areas I recognize, there may be some grays out there. That isn't when you're putting up, again, the rules of Christianity from Moses and teaching everybody in the fifth grade class and the when you're a junior in high school, this is what we all need to follow. That has got to be in violation of the Supreme Court. Can you do it at a private institution? Sure you can. Why? Because it is private, right? That's not a problem. Right. It doesn't run afoul of the Constitution. It's the reason why you can also have higher institutions of learning that also are religious in nature. That is entirely permissible. Public funding, public support, that's when the difference is made. This issue about a divided Supreme Court in recent times, we can chat some other time about it. We've had a drift again in recent cases. There are three or four of them in which John Roberts has been at the lead saying, you know, more and more the standard is not so much are you establishing religion, is discriminating against it. And if you don't give public funds, for example, for various support mechanisms, for scholarships to the private schools, to the religious schools, you are discriminating against them, and you can't do that. And we'll see if that's opening the door to, again, these Bible cases coming back to the Supreme Court.
They're going to throw everything at the wall and try to get a Dobbs again and bring down, because this has been the statement, the white Christian nationalists, this is what they want. They want this guy, Ryan Walters. I thought he was basically... wanting the Department of Education job, but Linda McMahon got that.
Oh, he wanted it.
He wanted that. He's trying. Speaking of the Supreme Court, we got a caller in, Keith from Broadhead. You are next. Welcome to the show, man. We got Jim here. What do you got for us?
Hey, gentlemen. There's a line in the movie, The Da Vinci Code, which is one of the best that touches on what you're saying there. As long as there has been one true God, there's been killing in his name. You know, it's a little ironic that one of the Ten Commandments is thou shalt not kill, and religion has killed more people in the world, in the history of the world, than any other single force on the planet.
Yes.
I actually wanted to touch on the Supreme Court a little bit, because I'm curious, James, if you have an idea of how we can still go about getting some sort of judicial ethics through for the Supreme Court. Is that something that is possibly going to happen ever?
The answer is there are people out there like you, Keith, and people in Congress who are making a mighty effort to do just that. You've got the introduction of legislation, at least in this Congress, 118th Congress, both the House and the Senate. There's a fellow named Sheldon Whitehouse. There's a fellow named Dick Durbin, who's the head of the Judiciary Committee, coming from Illinois. They've got legislation. Basically, it's premised upon the notion that, well, the Supreme Court hasn't really done it. They put together some standards out there, but there's no enforcement mechanisms. And White House and others have said, if you don't do it, we will. And they have responded to everything, Keith, that I suspect you have digested with respect to Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas, all the issues about financial concerns, employment, friends having cases before you, all those kinds of things. It's there. And the question is, will the incoming Senate, you've got to pass it by a 60 vote, will they have the votes to do it? No, in the coming Senate they won't. That's not to say you don't reintroduce it. That's not to say you don't continue to advocate for that, as long as John Roberts and the other members of the Supreme Court are not going to do it themselves. And doing it, what does that mean? Imposing upon themselves the same standard, Keith, that every other federal judge in America, district court judges, appellate court judges, have to follow. The Supreme Court does not. Supreme Court, Keith, to your very good point, needs to do that themselves and say we will be monitored. Interesting, one of the justices, I think it was Elena Kagan, said, let's us establish an additional group of judges who are district court judges, appellate court judges. They'll be kind of the OLR, if you will. They'll be the ones who will tell us what we got to do and what we can't do. Fascinating concept, right? But it's some enforcement mechanism, and you do have justice is what that means, is who are committed to doing this. Right now, Keith, you can do it if we get our legislature, regardless of the partisan perspective on it, to do just that. They've got to do it.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Amicus, a law review that broadcasts here on the Civic Media Radio Network Saturdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Jim, always a pleasure, man. I'll be tuning in once again.
What a delight to be with you once again, my
Absolutely.
Friend.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jess P.S. on the board. Thank you to our fair audience. Have a wonderful evening. Stick around. Nightlight with Pete Schwabe is coming up next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.